I'm going to spoil it for you because we're going to talk about it later, but he says Nolan basically stole the concept for Inception from Paprika.
I didn't know it was going there, essentially. I was genuinely shocked by it, and yeah, it was incredible. Just an incredible range of emotion coming out of that sequence.
It must have been half part CGI to augment some things, but then it didn't look it, and it just kind of blew me away.
There can't be anybody who sits down and watches Paprika and understands every moment of it from beginning to end. And I think the part of the figuring it out is part of the pleasure of it.
Hey everyone, welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Today I'm joined by Matt.
Hello.
Amelie.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hi.
And we're going to be chatting about Paprika. Thank you as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes that you can hear right now. Thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his editing skills. And please do remember to head over to Spotify and Apple Podcasts to give us a 5-star rating and a glowing, glowing review. If you want to join the conversation with us, we are on Twitter at FlixWatcherPod or on Instagram at FlixWatcher. And also Threads at FlixWatcher, but you may not be there yet.
Hello film fans, welcome to Flix Watcher Podcast. Our guests today are Matthew and Amelie. Over to you please, Amelie, to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, I'm Amelie Thomas and I feature on a podcast that is specialised in erotic thrillers, what we love about them and hate about them. We've covered about 100 films, like soon is going to be the 100th episode.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's been going on for 5 or 6 years now and record with Matt.
7 years.
7 years, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah, record with Matt, who is also tonight on the podcast episode, and Paul and Leslie.
And Matt, who are you?
I'm Matthew Turner. I'm a film critic and podcaster and author. Yes, as Amelie said, we're the co-hosts of the Fatal Attractions podcast on erotic thrillers. We've done our 99th episode and our 100th episode is going to be coming up quite soon and we've got something quite special planned for that.
So hopefully by the time this is out, your 100th episode should be out.
I don't think so, no.
Oh, okay.
We haven't booked it yet.
Our 99th episode isn't out yet.
But you don't know when this is going to be out.
Premature erotica excitement.
That's true, but I do know how long it takes us between recordings.
Okay.
So it's likely to be a while yet, but it is coming.
Are you allowed to say what 100th episode is going to be?
No, I don't think we can. It's going to be
a surprise.
Okay, so that is Fatal Attract Pod. So guys, if you're intrigued, they've talked about Basic Instinct, you've talked about Body of Evidence, you've talked about Sliver, you've talked about recent one with Sydney Sweeney.
Mm-hmm. The Voyeurs.
The Voyeurs, yeah. We love that.
Yeah.
That's actually our best episode. If you're going to listen to one episode of Fatal Attractions, I think that's the one I'd recommend. The episode on the voyeurs, because we had writer-director Michael Mohan on, and he basically talked for an hour and a half about literally everything about the movie, from working with intimacy coordinators to the casting to his kind of research on erotic thrillers. I mean, it was an absolute delight, actually. And he came back and did our Gone Girl episode as well, which is a real treat.
Oh, wow. Is that an erotic thriller, Gone Girl?
We treat it as one, yeah. It made it through.
It's good to be able to have some good films in there, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was going to say Gone Girl threw me. By erotic thrillers.
We've had plenty of films on it that are less erotic and less thrilling than Gone Girl.
I guess, yeah, there's some Emmy Ratajkowski is in it erotically and it's thrilling, so sure.
And there's the whole scene when she slits his throat as well. That's very erotic as well.
I mean, I don't know what happens. Yeah.
Spoiler, if you haven't seen Gone Girl, just forget you heard that.
Yes, sorry. It's not the main character, so it's fine.
Gone Girl comes in and out of Netflix. It might be on there right now. You listen to it, so stop. No, don't stop. Listen to the rest of this episode. Mm-hmm. Then go and check and see if Gone Girl's on there and watch it so Amelie doesn't randomly spoil, you know, Gone Girl for you.
And then go and listen to our Gone Girl episode with Michael Mohan as a special guest.
Exactly. Anyway, we're here talking about Paprika, which is your choice, Matt. Can you tell us first of all why you chose it? And then you have 60 seconds in which you have the time to give us the synopsis.
Right. Well, I chose it because, rather selfishly, I'd never seen it. And I recently saw Tokyo Godfathers and enjoyed that. And also, so Tokyo Godfathers is also directed by Satoichi Kon, who's the director of this. But mainly we did Perfect Blue on the podcast on Fatal Attractions. And that was we had Robbie Collin on from The Telegraph to talk about that because he's a big anime fan. And so it was a fantastic discussion. He really recommended kind of Khan's other movies, and I hadn't seen Paprika, and it just popped up on Netflix, and I've been looking for an excuse to watch it, basically. And then this podcast proved the perfect excuse to watch it. Again, like I said, rather selfishly, but I really enjoyed it. So it was a great excuse. Thank you for the opportunity to do that.
No, thank you for choosing it. It's been on the radar since we did. I think we're going to talk about comparisons with Inception. That was the first time I mentioned it in the pod. But it's one of those films that's just difficult to get a hold of. You have to really, really want to get it, or wait until it comes onto an easy streaming service, and that's Netflix. So, synopsis timer starts now.
So, ostensibly, it's about a group of people chasing a machine. Someone has stolen a machine called the DC Mini.
A Super MacGuffin.
Yeah, which allows people to travel in... what does it do? Does it record dreams? It does all sorts of things. It does lots of dream stuff. Right? So, actually, the exact purpose of the DC Mini isn't entirely clear, because there's all sorts of things that it can do. But it certainly can allow people to view dreams on video screens, and later to enter dreams. And you end up, the characters end up kind of going in and out of each other's dreams, essentially. And there's a sort of sinister figure who's trying to, we won't reveal at this point what he's trying to do, but there is an antagonist, let's say, and there are multiple protagonists, like, who are essentially chasing this bad character through the dreams and everything, one of whom is a sort of dual personality, essentially. Still, we can use the time while we're talking about the episode to discuss exactly the dual nature of exactly who Paprika is. But anyway, she's the main female character.
Kind of, yes. Well, Emily, had you heard of Satoshi Kon before this? Oh, of course you did Perfect Blue.
So we did Perfect Blue. And yeah. So I've got a very good friend who, every time we were playing the game called Cinephile during COVID. I don't know if you know, it's a card game.
Okay.
So it's really cool. It's like from America, but it's a card game, and then you can do like 6 degrees of separation between the actors, or you can do movie actor. Like you take, for example, Joaquin Phoenix in I Was Not There or something, and then you see Joaquin Phoenix, you need to find another movie. So it's like relation. So if we're playing that game.
So it's like 6 degrees of separation.
Kind of. But you can do different things. So you can do the filmography of the whole actor. Like, so everyone has to see a film until you run dry, and then you're out of the game, you know. So we were playing that over Zoom. And so Sam kept saying, Paprika is so much better. And he kept saying, basically, I'm going to spoil it for you because we're going to talk about it later. But he says, Nolan basically stole the concept for Inception from Paprika, you know? So he kept saying that. So when I realized it was on Netflix a few years ago, I actually watched it.
Oh, has it been on Netflix before?
It's been for a while now.
It was on
now.
Once before, I think, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because I missed it the last time around, and I was delighted when it came back again.
Yeah, so it's been here for a little while. Because I was trying to watch it at the Prince Charles Cinema as well, but like I didn't get, and then I saw that it was on Netflix and watched it on Netflix. But yeah, so the first time around, really, really enjoyed it. So, but I have some issues with anime. I'm not a huge fan of anime, so I need to really get into it. And then also it's the same with Miyazaki as well. Sometimes I just can't get into Miyazaki. And I think it's also because of the richness of the details. It's so extravagant. It's like cornucopia of things. And like the parade in the film is the example of what I don't really like about animes, you know, when it's like so many little trinkets, so many things coming out, like I get overwhelmed. So I think with the first viewing, really enjoyed it, but I find it quite difficult to follow as well. I think it's more complicated than Inception, honestly, to follow. Mm. I don't know about you guys.
I mean, as my very poor attempt at a synopsis just proved, it is quite hard to summarise, yeah.
Exactly. It is so complicated. And the fact that it's in Japanese, I mean, normally I watch films in the original version, but my subtitles are in English and I'm not an English speaker originally, you know, so I'm French. So for me, it's like double
whammy.
Processing double the languages, you know. So yeah, so I think for the second time, I didn't enjoy it as much, but I completely understand the genius of Satoshi Kon, you know. So, and I think it's such an original concept and the animation is incredible. But the second time, I didn't enjoy it as much.
It really is extraordinary, the animation. Yeah, yeah, it's just really overwhelming. It's the right word. Like, it's the colour, the detail, the sort of just the imagination of the images coming at you constantly is, yeah, really just... I gave it 5 stars. Like, oh, sure, shit, I shouldn't have said that, should I?
a spoiler for the scores.
And Letterboxd, I gave it 5 stars immediately. It was a full-on, like, wow, this is incredible. So I didn't know anything about it going in, actually.
So you didn't know the Inception comparisons?
I must have heard that at some point, but it hadn't... I wasn't going into it today thinking, oh, this is the thing that Nolan took Inception from. Obviously, it's immediately apparent, like the way, not even just the way they use the dreams, but some of the images of, like, you know, the sort of streets folding in and stuff like that.
It's all the corridors.
Yeah, the corridors. And all of that is in there. Mm-hmm. So it's, Nolan would have a tough time denying it, I reckon, if somebody like leveled that accusation at him directly.
I think people have.
What did he say? Did he ever reply?
Oh, I don't think, I don't know what his reply was, but I don't think he'd like shy away from it, because a lot of directors, a lot of artists steal from each other, copy from each other, borrow from each other, whichever way you want to do it. Quentin Tarantino's, you know, there's like, if you go on YouTube, there's lots of clips of his film side by side with the films he's kind of stolen from.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of accepted. This, I don't think it's a wholesale stealing, but there's definitely scenes and shots and themes where you think like, okay, I can see what you've done here.
Nolan obviously has his own plot for Inception. Like, he's created his own plot. The plot's different. But the ideas and the visuals, absolutely they're there. The thing that surprised me really was, even within like the dream, you know, everything that's going on with the dreams and all the imaginative stuff that's happening then you get to that scene. There's a key scene that happens kind of, I want to say, like 3/4 of the way in, basically, so it's the scene where Paprika has been captured and she's kind of laid out like a butterfly. From that scene onwards, my jaw was on the floor, basically, because I wasn't aware. I didn't know it was going there, essentially. I was genuinely shocked by it. And yeah, it was incredible. Just an incredible range of emotion coming out of that sequence.
Helen, your thoughts? This first time watching Paprika?
Yeah, so it kind of got sort of half-picked a few months ago. I watched it then, but I was kind of drawn to it for the I think it was like maybe a BuzzFeed article or something like that with the Inception references, and I'm a big fan of Inception, and we'd obviously done Tokyo Godfathers, so that's kind of where my interest had come through.
Hold on, not from our 100th episode with Edith Bowman when I said Inception, a lot of people...
Yeah,
I said it in that
episode.
Mention
it then, but like it wasn't until we did Tokyo Godfathers.
It was still BuzzFeed.
I thought it was okay. I don't know whether maybe my expectations were kind of super high. I could kind of see there's some Inception-y themes in there, but I don't think it's like a complete rip-off.
Yeah, I agree with you, Helen. Yeah.
I really like the parade stuff. I really like the mad stuff. But I find this isn't exclusive to this film. It's kind of exclusive to... Well, it's a problem that anime has, was that in that... With like Dr. Chiba, there's kind of a intelligent and strong female, but in Paprika, she's overly sexually objectified. And in that scene where she's raped as well, kind of made me think, oh, it didn't really... I kind of wondered why that was necessary and where it was going. And yeah, I think after that happened, I lost a little bit of interest. And I think there's a lot going on, and I wasn't quite sure all the time what was going on, and kind of lost a little bit of interest towards the end. So I think it started off good. And then for me, kind of that scene and just kind of the whole thing about Paprika being, it's all kind of like based on her kind of like female body and all of that. I was just a bit like, really? Not for me.
She's the manic dream, pixie dream girl, isn't she?
The anime version.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those.
Did anybody pick up on my absolute favourite moment? So you know, like at a certain point, she's on a cloud with a red jacket and a gold band and a black staff.
Mm.
That's Monkey.
What, Journey to the West?
Yeah, from the TV show from the 80s.
Well, I don't know that. I haven't seen this. So.
My jaw was on the floor at that moment.
Really?
I actually squealed with joy because it suddenly occurred to me that that's what it was doing. I mean, see, I haven't watched that show since I was a kid in the 80s. And so it was so weird to see, like, riding on the cloud, wielding the staff and, the get-up. And, I mean, they also have Tinkerbell, which obviously not quite... She goes from the monkey costume into the Tinkerbell costume, which isn't quite the same level of referencing. But still, I was just like, I did not see that coming, basically. And it's joyful.
I mean, I think, yeah, I was kind of, from the first frame on, was like jaw on the floor in terms of the animation style. I've never seen humans drawn and animated in such detail before. I think with Tokyo Godfathers, it was a bit cartoony, although it still looks stunning, especially, you know, the contrast with the background. But here, I was just like, I just couldn't believe that. Every time I saw people walking, I just thought they must have spent so much time just animating this and styling this out. And there were so many bits where there's like tinsel hanging down from the ceiling. And I was like, is that real tinsel? Or they've drawn that. Or when the butterflies are coming out. Because it must have been half part CGI to augment some things, but then it didn't look it. And it just, it kind of blew me away in terms of what I was seeing on the screen.
Yeah.
A lot of times I had no idea what the hell was going on. And it's definitely a film where I think I need to watch it again. But that's the same with a few films, Christopher Nolan films, just in general. I always need to... I've not watched Tenet again.
Tenet.
I need to... Inception, you know, is one of those films I'll perpetually keep watching because there's stuff in there which I'm know when I'm going to capture everything. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that it's... I missed a lot of stuff or didn't fully engage in the storyline and the plot and where it's going. But certainly the visuals were there to pull me along, just to at least say, okay, this is what's happening now. Slightly annoying in a way, this is, you know, boo-hoo for me, in that in the next viewing, I'd ideally like to watch it maybe with an English track so I can just not have to focus so much, because this is one of the rare occasions where the subtitles going on and there's so much stuff going on the screen as well where I can't, my head was just like, I can't keep up. can't keep up with this.
And imagine me then, because another foreign language as well. It's two different foreign languages.
I definitely thought I wanted to rewatch it with the English track as well for the same reason.
They don't have it on Netflix.
No,
they
don't have it, yeah.
Because at one point I was like, I'm going to switch. And then basically they're Portuguese, something like that, and they don't have it. So, yeah.
Okay. Gosh. Mm. Did not know that. But, I mean, at least it's, 90 minutes is very rewatchable, friendly, with that kind of running time.
Yeah.
I think next rewatch, I'd need to prime myself a bit. Be like, no hangover, certainly. Not that I had one this time. No distractions. Sitting down, knowing that I'm going to watch Paprika for an hour and a half and be, like, ready and waiting. Probably in a cinema screen would probably be the best place to watch it.
Yeah.
It had me from the opening, like the opening scene with the circus, and then the way the circus goes into all those other scenarios, which turn out to be movie-related scenarios, specific movies. So it's like, it's Dr. No and Tarzan and The Greatest Show on Earth, the three movies being referenced in that sequence. I love that in the end, the movie is kind of about the main character rediscovering a love of movies. Like, it ends with him going back to the cinema. I thought that was fantastic. And the way that plays out.
Did you realise that apparently... I was reading about it. When you start explaining, you know, cinema and then, you know, like the eye level and everything to Paprika, he's dressed apparently as a Kurosawa.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
I didn't know that because I never saw what Kurosawa looked like, but apparently he's dressed as Kurosawa.
There must be all kinds of references like that in here.
Yeah, there will be like a BuzzFeed to name check them again article that says, maybe not BuzzFeed, something a bit more intelligent. I don't want to.
Yeah. I watched this video on YouTube and they explained Paprika and it was really, really interesting. Yeah. So that's what he was saying.
That's what I need to do next is what's that?
Yeah, send you the link.
Can you do
read the Wikipedia
article. I'd like to watch
that.
Yeah,
it was really interesting.
Is there anything else you want to say before I head to the scores, guys? Obviously, we can carry on talking about the film in the round.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's uncomfortable to talk about the sexual assault scene and I appreciate that that can be triggering for people and all that sort of stuff. But I just found that it was such an imaginative way of doing that, of that sequence. I mean, you called it a rape scene earlier, Helen, and obviously it is a rape scene, but it's not a rape scene the way we traditionally associate the images with that phrase, right? So instead, it's like the hands go inside her flesh somehow. And inside her clothing and inside her flesh and upwards and up through her body and then basically split apart the outer shell, which is Paprika, to reveal the character inside, which is Atsuko. When I just thought that was an extraordinary way of doing that sequence. It was really imaginative and disturbing, yes, but in an incredible way, really. I do question, as you said, like what exactly was the purpose of that moment, but at the same time, it was an incredibly arresting image and treatment of that sequence. Can we talk about also, just before we do wrap up on Paprika?
We're not wrapped up. But...
What exactly Paprika is? Is she an avatar? What is she?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you.
I don't know. Lost interest in working it out.
Maybe the alter ego of, you know, Atsuko?
She is the alter ego in some way. She is the alter ego, but it's because there's that sequence where she runs across the bridge and becomes and slowly becomes Paprika.
Yeah,
that reminded me of Wonder Woman in the 70s. The sort of the way that, you know, you'd get, you know, Linda Carter would spin around and gradually change slightly the clothing in that sort of sequence.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so, yeah, she is a superhero of a sort, but it's also a different person. It's much more like an avatar.
But maybe that's how she pictures it. Like, she fantasizes herself, you know, like how she would like to be, to look like and act like, you know, like, because she's a bit more conservative in real life. So maybe that's how she would like herself.
She's the free-spirited version inside, literally inside. Well, no, not literally inside, because Atsuko is inside Paprika. Yeah. But yeah.
But the problem is, so as Helen said, I think it's very much, it really reflects Japanese males' fantasies a bit, you know, the way they're pictured. It's the same in Perfect Blue as well. It's very much, you know how they have all those fantasies about schoolgirls and that kind of thing. And I think that...
It's reflected here.
Yeah, you can tell that it's mostly men behind it.
Oh, they have that horrible upskirt bit in the parade. Do you remember the bit with the sort of schoolgirls kicking their legs up and then sort of frog like men going under them and taking photographs like it's a sort of chorus, like it's a sort of
but that's it,
chorus in a Broadway show or something. Yeah, that was pretty creepy.
And when did this come out as well? Because I think it might be also
2006, I think.
So it might be partly, it's a bit late in that partly of the time as well. I don't think that would, a lot of the stuff probably wouldn't pass now.
Yeah, but in Japan, you know, they have some weird fantasies.
When did 500 Days of Summer come out?
Oh, that is a good
around
question.
Around the same time, probably.
I want to say 2006 probably, but let's double check.
2009.
Because there's still that kind of, like, in retrospect, that kind of nonsense in that film.
2009, so a bit later.
Which wouldn't pass the muster now, I don't think. But yeah, let's head to scores, guys.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. Our scores are always out of five. You can have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Matthew, with your recommendability, which you kind of already told us, but like...
Yeah, I loved it.
That's for Letterboxd. What's the recommendability score?
I mean, I'd
it?
Give it a solid, let's say a four then, for recommendability, because you have to want to be watching an anime, a crazy anime movie in the first place. So if that's where you are, then yes, it's a solid four.
Amelie?
Yeah, so me, I gave it a three because it's probably one of the best animes I've seen, but I don't think anime is for everyone. It's very complicated to follow and so many details and crazy, you know, to say batshit crazy elements. And I think it's more for the aficionados of anime or people that, you know, like a massive film buffs and I watch a lot of films. So I don't think it's very mainstream at all.
I would say that it is complicated to follow, but I feel like the fact that it's within the context of it, it is also pleasurable. That complexity is itself quite pleasurable, as opposed to, I mean, I've seen some anime for work, you know, for reviewing, like this sort of Demon Slayer stuff, where it's just like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, you know, there's characters fighting other characters and think people want this or what, or that, and I just have absolutely no clue. Whereas at least here you knew the fact that it was all crazy dream logic was part of the story in the first place. Like, it's an integral part of the story. So yes, it is difficult to follow, but it's meant to be difficult to follow. There can't be anybody who sits down, watches Paprika and understands every moment of it from beginning to end. And I think the part of the figuring it out is part of the pleasure of it.
So what's your score, Amelie?
Three for that one, recommendability.
Helen?
I'm with Amelie on this one, a three. I think there definitely is an audience for it, but I don't think this is going to win kind of a casual viewer or kind of like a general audience. So yeah, three for me. I'm glad I've seen it. I can tick it off now.
I think if you love Inception, you will also get a lot out of Paprika.
But I love Inception so much that I was just like, oh, this isn't anything like it.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be like it, but you can see definite like,
yeah, he's obviously like taken some influences from it, but they're totally different films.
It's like, well, not the same. Well, like I saw Departed and seen the respective version, and I've seen a lot of the films that Quentin did pull off, and I do like seeing those references. So I think if you say, hey, do you like Inception? Do you like animation in general? Have a go. Mm-hmm. That'll be good. Yeah. So I'd say 4, because if you do admire any kind of animated artwork, then this is like the peak of that. Just generally, just it looks hand-drawn, definitely augmented by, well, not definitely, I presume it's been augmented by computer graphics, but in a way that it doesn't take away from it at all. There was never like, oh, that's done by CGI. It was just more, just added to everything that was going on the screen. The faces, the expressions they had, the eyes, the walking, the parades, all the stuff that was going on there, which was just literally, apart from maybe Into the Spider-Verse and those kind of films, when you see stuff in animation, you kind of just go, oh, it's just been drawn, that's fine. But this was like, wait, how are they doing this exactly? So I think I would tell people there, but I would put caveats in there. Like the person who gave me the DVD for Mulholland Drive and said, you're not going to understand it, just watch it. And that's why, he knew I liked films, so he just said, you're not going to understand it, don't worry about it, go at it. Repeat viewing score, Matthew.
I definitely want to watch it again. So yeah, I'll go full on that too, I think. And to caveat that, I very rarely rewatch things. I would almost always rather watch something new than rewatch something. So the fact that I want to rewatch it in the first place is a big plus in its favour.
What's your memory and recollection for films like generally?
Not great. I mean,
okay. Yes, I can tell.
It depends what it is. Yeah, I mean, it's okay. But equally, I have trouble remembering plots of films I saw this week. So, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what Letterboxd is for. Put it down there. It'll be fine.
That is what Letterboxd is for. Literally, that's what, I mean, I've logged almost everything I've ever seen on Letterboxd at this point, which is something like 14,000 movies. And that really helps when I can't remember whether I've actually seen anything or not. So I kept like diaries and things like, and film lists and things like that from the age of about 10. So I over lockdown, I went back through all that information and added it all into Letterboxd, basically. So
indeed,
So I can even tell, and on a lot of cases, I can tell you not only if I've seen something, but also quite often where I saw it and who I saw it with. So that's a really lovely thing to have as a 52-year-old man with a very failing memory. And so whilst I know I've seen stuff like Casablanca and what have you, like the classics and things, but quite often if there's a generic title or something of a 40s movie, I might have seen it and I might not. I can check Letterboxd, and if I wrote down that I've seen it, then I know that I've seen it from that. So yes, sorry, I went a bit off track there.
It's okay. It's interesting to just recall that, yeah. I mean, the reason I ask is because sometimes there are people who just remember a thing. Like, I've got some friends who can remember watching a football match and know the play-by-play, and I'm like, I don't even remember. I remember I played a match one time somewhere, and we won generally, I think, but I can't remember what happened play-by-play, let alone watch a match happening and not be a part of it and remember everything that happened. So there are just some people who can do that.
Yeah.
So I thought you weren't a re-watcher because you're like, I've got it now, it's in my head. But then Paprika was so complex that you thought, it's not in my head yet. I need to rewatch it again so it is in my head, and then I can move on to the next film. Amelie, sorry, that was a strange digression there.
That's fine. So I think for me, I would say 3. I did really enjoy it the first time, but this time I struggled.
Where did you watch it the first time?
So the first time I watched it on Netflix, but I think it was about 2 years ago. So I gave it, like, on Letterboxd, I had given it a 4. I think I might lower it now to 3.5 on Letterboxd, you know, but I just think that because it's such genius and, you know, the animation is incredible and everything. So for me, 4 is excellent, you know, so I think you might still deserve this, but...
If 4 is excellent, what's 5?
5 is masterpiece. It's perfect. So I don't have that many films that have 5.
Not even our next one.
Yeah. Yes, the next one is got 5. Yes.
Hey, we don't allude to the next one. No one knows what the next one is.
Okay, sorry.
The next one. It might be the one that precedes this. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Helen, repeat viewing score.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I'm going to go with 1. I could have watched it again ahead of this, and I was like, nah, I can't be asked. Even though it's only 90 minutes, I was like, I had got my fill with the first time. Sorry.
I will just say that if it comes up at the Prince Charles, I'll definitely make an effort to see it on the big screen.
That's the next round. The next round of scores.
Sorry. Just ruining me. Oh, just playing with
I'm
our
so
format.
Sorry. Okay, I'll just shut up until prompted.
Kobe, repeat viewing.
So repeat viewing score for me, I'm going to put 4 because it's, for me, the higher repeat viewing scores are things that are just super easy to watch at any, you know, drop of a hat, and I'll, you know, watch them every year until, you know, the day I die. Or there's films where you have to rewatch it again. You may not watch it that often, but you just have to. And for me, this is like, I have to rewatch it again at some point, maybe not this year, maybe not, you know, in 3 years' time, but it's like a definite rewatch once I've consumed that YouTube video that you're going to send us, Emily. A small screen score, Matt.
I actually watched it on my iPad, so I'll give it a very high small screen score of 4 because it was fine. I mean, I do want to see it on a big screen, but I had the option of the iPad or the sort of slightly bigger telly, and I went with the iPad, and I was very happy with that. I actually partly watched it on the iPad because I knew about this scoring round was coming up. So yeah, so there you go. Solid 4.
Emily.
I watched it on TV both times. I think 4, yeah. I think that it doesn't need to be... I mean, obviously, if you want to go and see it at the Prince Charles Cinema, it would be more enjoyable. I think that everything is more enjoyable in a cinema. But it works really well on a TV. It's fine. You don't lose the elements or like the spectacle of it or something. So.
Helen.
I know for a fact that you two could well go and see it at the Prince Charles Cinema and use one of your complimentary vouchers that we have won from the film quiz. So
I just blew two of mine.
You should use your voucher, go and see it, because it is on quite regularly, I think. I've seen it. I wouldn't want to watch it at the cinema, but I think it's fine to watch at home. And also, it's been one of those ones that has been a bit elusive online, so it is on Netflix now if it's been on your list for a while. So 5 for small screen.
I do definitely want to watch this in the cinema. So I'm going to go 3.5. A lot going on the screen that I'd like to experience in a bigger mode. And also, just with the subtitles, it just pulls you in a bit more on the bigger screen as well. So engagement score, Matt?
Yeah, solid 4. Absolutely.
You've gone 4s across the board today.
Yeah, I've gone on 4s across the board, yeah.
Emily?
So for me, it's 3 because this time, you know, I paused it so many times. I was really, really struggling to get into it again, especially with the Japanese, the English subtitles. I was tired. I knew what was coming. You know, I had seen it already. So I struggled to really get into it this time around. But the first time I did a bit more. So that's why I gave it 3.
Helen.
I'm a 3 as well for this. It kind of... really enjoyed the setup, but less so the kind of exploration, and maybe it just kind of made things more complicated than it needed to be, and it was just a bit of like, okay, well, where is this going? Okay, it's going there. Okay, so yeah, 3.
I'm going 4.2. I was excited to see the next scenes, excited about what was on the screen, didn't know what was going on half the time, but that didn't stop me wanting to watch it again and just pursue watching it. I was also quite time crunched this time when watching it, so it kind of, I don't know if that made me lean forward a bit. I was just trying to battle with a few different things. Yeah, I don't know if that made me more engaged or not, actually. Who cares? It doesn't matter. That gives us an overall score of 3.54375. I thought it was going to be higher than that, but hey, there you go. Repeat viewing score has let it down the most with an average of 3 across the board. Helen giving it a 1.
Yeah, sorry. My fault.
Yes, everyone do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod, and do follow us because we talk about film in general, but also because before going to a recording such as this, we do give a shout out asking you guys to give your opinions on the film. So look out for a tweet saying something similar to, we're reviewing Paprika with the only clear Luna, and at FilmFan1971 from Fatal Attract Pod, have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. And we had one review.
Yeah, so I don't know who replied because it was from the Fatal Attraction.
So it's from one of your team-up people.
I'm going to guess Paul. It sounds like Paul to me.
It sounds like a Paul, yeah.
I think it's Paul, yes. So Paul from the Fatal Attractions podcast Twitter said, Satoshi Kon never missed. A kaleidoscopic torrent of imagination and emotion and something everyone should see. Full 5 stars.
Perfect. Matthew, tell us about your Twitter and Emily, tell us about your Twitter and then we'll go.
Yes, I'm basically FilmFan1971 on pretty much everything from Letterboxd to Twitter to Instagram to Blue Sky to all the other. I don't really use the other platforms. I'm on all of them. Blue Sky, Threads, whatever the other one was. The other two are Hive and the other one. But I don't really use them. I'm essentially on Twitter till I die or it dies, whichever comes first.
Don't say that.
And yeah, I guess the main thing I'd point people in the direction of is, well, 2 things. First of all, hashtag Precode April is coming up, which is basically watching and talking about Precode movies on Twitter, if you'd like to join in with that. I created that 2 years ago and it's going to be in its 3rd year this year, which is very exciting. And secondly, the main thing I do online that I'm mostly proud of is a series of Hidden Gems columns for Vodzilla. I write for a website called Vodzilla and I write Hidden Gems columns, which is essentially the best films you've never heard of that are currently playing on Netflix and the best films you've never heard of that are currently playing on Amazon Prime. So I'd point people in the direction of those.
Fair play. Emily.
Yeah, so me, I'm at the only Cleo Luna. I don't use Twitter as much as I used to because of, you know, the shit show now on the platform. And no, I had such a great film Twitter circle. And I think I can meet all of you guys through that Twitter circle, actually. So sometimes I check in, I look at people, what they've been saying. But I'm not very active on it anymore.
Well, cool. Well, I guess Fatal Attract Pod is where they should find you.
Oh, yes, we probably should mention Fatal Attract Pod. Yeah. We are also on Blue Sky with Fatal Attract Pod, but again, we're not really using it. It's a sort of just in case everything dies. That's where they can find us if it... Yeah, we're at Fatal Attract Pod, and we're on most platforms where you find podcasts.
Well, thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure to talk Paprika finally and watch it finally. Well, we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank
you. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes and Rockwood Audio's editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.